Monday, 2nd August to Tuesday, 10th August 1915, Lonesome Pine. These past days we've visited hell. I've had no time till now to record my thoughts, and do so while all is fresh in my mind. About me, the remnants of my battalion, my platoon, and my dearest mates move listlessly. I hear some men making light of what we've seen, yet others coil like children, crying and shaking uncontrollably. Others still cradle their mates and rock them as babies. I'm numbed to all. Lone Pine is ours now, but I can't help wondering if it was worth it. My platoon has been reduced to 7 men. Although I'm almost heartbreakingly relieved to find some of the old Randwick firm still among the living, Alf is here looking battered and worn with a bloodied bandage around his head and another wrapping his left arm. Ever the tough old soldier, he refuses evacuation. Gilly is also here, but the cheerful, cheeky smile is gone. Paul Crane will be bringing no more snakes into our tents as he is amongst the dead. Grey was wounded and evacuated, and his fate is now with the doctors. Both the Berwick brothers got knocked about. Peter's among the missing. Whether he is dead or wounded and his name not recorded when he was evacuated, we don't know. Charlie copped a bullet in the right shoulder and another in his bum while he was being carried to the rear. But so many, too many, are not here. The week started without hint of what lay ahead. Monday to Wednesday, we were on garrison duties in the trenches, all quiet except for sniping and desultory shelling. On Thursday morning, we were relieved by the 8th Battalion and went into the rest area and enjoyed a full day's rest with no fatigues or work parties, and then a good night's sleep without any guards or pickets. I enjoyed the best night's sleep I think I've had since we landed. But our little idol was simply to prepare us for the horrors ahead. At 10 a.m. on Friday, the CO addressed the battalion and said we were to have a fight that afternoon. The 1st Brigade had been selected to mount an attack on the Turks up at Lone Pine. We stowed all unneeded items in our knapsacks and handed these, along with our haversacks and bayonet scabbards, into store. My precious typewriter and letters I entrusted to a mate in the signals section who works at Battalion HQ and who would not be taking part in the stunt. Each man was issued a full load of ammunition along with 2 empty sandbags. We were also ordered to assemble our entrenching tools and fit them into our belts ready for immediate use. All ranks were also issued with a white square of cloth to be sewn onto the back of the shirt, along with white calico armbands to be worn around each arm. These were for identification. We were excited, and despite nerves, I was ready to lead my men into battle. The attack went in at 5:30 p.m. Our battalion and 3rd Battalion led the attack, with us on the left flank and 3rd on the right. Our company, C, was the right leading company for the assault, with A Company on the left, B and D in support. 2nd Battalion was in support with 1st in reserve. We moved up to our hop-off point at 4:30 p.m, taking our time as we moved under cover. Meanwhile, the already heavy bombardment on the enemy position thickened up. Half the company were detached into saps, which stretched halfway across no man's land. These lads had a fair head start when the barrage lifted. My platoon was not one of those pushed into a sap, so when the time came, we had to run like buggery across the open ground to reach the Turk trenches. Our orders were to leap across the first 2 trenches and take the 3rd trench. Once the trench had been secured, half the battalion was to garrison it until relief, while the other half was to turn back and clear the 2nd and 1st lines, meeting up with the 2nd Battalion. The barrage lifted at 5:30 on the dot, and over we went. Despite the intense barrage, the enemy's first line was barely touched, and immediately we sprang from our trench with a cheer. We were met with a hail of rifle and MG fire, which bowled over dozens of our boys. We ran over the first line trenches, which were covered by thick pine logs, and gratefully someone else's problem, and reached the second line. Unfortunately, this trench was too wide to jump across, laden as we were, and many of the lads who tried simply fell in among the surviving Turk defenders. The rest of us quickly jumped down and joined in dispatching the Turks. From then, the action became a blurred nightmare for me as the Turks launched attack after attack in an effort to retake the position, and we fought continuously for 3 days with no sleep and precious little food. In the steamy, dark, twisting trenches, the fight was reduced to rifles, pistols, bayonets, knives, bombs, even fists and boots. I've just left the fires of hell, and, by the grace of God, I have survived. As the battle still rages, we have thankfully been relieved, and all can only hope against hope that we will not have to return anytime soon. Officers and soldiers alike are exhausted, both physically and mentally. Whilst I would not dare utter a word of this experience to my family, I feel I need to record my recollections, albeit from blurred memory, of of the past few days. I worry that if I fail to do this, the eddy of shame, pride, and rage I feel inside will consume me. Movement towards Pozières and our jump-off point. The closer we got to our attack line, the slower our advance became. The ground was pocked with steep craters from incessant mauling by the ceaseless artillery. Our anticipated communications in the battle was nigh impossible due to the smoke, noise, flashes, and shadows from flares, rockets, and artillery. Instead, I had only my runners to rely on. We jumped our line at 12:30 a.m. on the 23rd. As we advanced with 1st and 3rd battalions to our right and 2nd forward and slightly to the left, machine gun fire from the extreme right flank swarmed us like bush flies. Too often, these biters found their mark within the ranks, mostly striking down the poor blighters of the 3rd. From the first scream, Alf, who was truly my right hand, was busy getting the casualty evacuation sorted, all the time trying to keep up with our advance. We pushed through Pozières Trench, with the German shells and trench fire tracking our every stride. We fell into their trench with numbers enough to push the Germans back. They retreated through their labyrinth of support lines, all of which were well dug, manned, and between us and the village. We relentlessly pushed through toward the village to face the retreating Germans, who had taken position with their comrades in the fortified houses and network of interjoined cellars. All the while, the artillery, ours and theirs, thrashed the ground, which rolled underfoot like a rickety railway carriage. We fought for every yard, every wall, and every pile of rubble. My men gave no quarter, each relentless in resolve and courageous. Between the half moon, the flares, and explosive flashes, there was enough light. But recognizable landmarks were all but impossible to find, such was the devastation of the artillery. We reached what was once the main road through the village by about 2:30 a.m. and set to digging in across the length of the village in readiness for a German counterattack. At first light, an advance from the Germans' OG line was well covered by our men and artillery, and it was quickly ended. Reports suggested the Germans had abandoned the village, but in the light we had to contend with accurate sniper fire from the rubble across the way. Men were dispatched in small groups to flush out the remaining Germans, and by day's end, we'd achieved our objective. Pozières village was ours. It's been an appalling week on the front for my lads. We're still recovering from a massive assault by the Germans just 2 days ago. The battalion has suffered significant casualties, 8 dead and 15 wounded just from D Company, and 40 captured. I lost Lieutenant Charles Hooper, Corporal Montgomery, and 8 diggers from the company. The Germans, however, suffered dearly. The ground is carpeted in all directions with their dead. Patrols report that piles of Germans lay dead near their own lines, killed while trying to breach their own superior wire defences. Such was their panicked withdrawal. I'm currently typing one-handed as my left arm is in a sling after being peppered by a Fritz grenade. It hurts like the devil, but I'll have to be patient as the dressing stations are struggling with the number of wounded, Australian and German. Alf has been bellowing at Hun prisoners all day, having them retrieve the wounded and bury the dead. He'll have a few more days of it yet. Sid has excused himself and has taken his cooker and supplies to the nearest dressing station to help the medical corps lads and their charges. Late last Sunday, after considerable heavy shelling, vast numbers of Germans appeared from the darkness and smashed through much of our thinly spread defences. It was a colossal raid made up of several German battalions. Our 4th had a frontage of over 4,000 yards to defend, far too much against a massive Hun offensive, the likes of which I've never seen. The Germans were everywhere, and not just the average Hun. These were the Prussian Guards, supposedly the Kaiser's best. The swines liberally employed their dreaded flamethrowers, Flammenwerfers, which put the wind up many. Most men chose a hasty withdrawal, save they meet a grisly end. Hun planes even got in on the act, strafing us before the RFC saw them off. So coordinated and accurate was the attack, and preceding artillery barrage, that I have no doubt whatsoever that their observation balloon, which we could see well to their rear, was guiding each and every move. One of our aeroplanes had a crack at shooting it down to no avail. In the assault, our line was completely broken and many of us were cut off from hours before the brigade reserves cleared the Germans out with a furious counterattack. One of the D Company posts was cut off for almost 2 days, but young Corporal McMillan managed to rally the men to hold on before they were relieved. The best shot in the battalion, Private Long, spent almost an entire day alone in a hollow, but says he made the best of it, claiming more than 100 Huns. Over the 2-day attack, I had to lead 3 frantic counterattacks to relieve pressure on my forward outposts. Many brave men volunteered to take ammunition forward to those in dire straits. Few have survived unscathed. Our soldiers' steadfast and selfless deeds of heroism make me proud to be an Australian, and I'm acutely aware that it is my privilege to be one of their officers. 11th Battalion on our flank suffered grievously. A lieutenant at one of their outposts, devoid of all ammunition, ordered his men to bayonet charge rather than capitulate. 80 dead Huns were found surrounding the post the following dawn. None of the defenders survived. Some of our divisional artillery was captured and some pieces destroyed before the Huns finally withdrew. Many of us are bitter about the scant defence we were compelled to use. Prior to the attack, we had in place small posts, 100 to 150 yards apart, each manned by 10 men. The remainder of their platoons were well to the rear, something unheard of only weeks ago. Defence in depth, it was called. The Germans must have learned of our disposition and decided to take advantage of our folly. Our situation, however, paled in comparison to the catastrophic attack on the formidable Hindenburg line last week to our northwest at a pace called Bulikor. For the first time I can recall, we sent a division, the 4th, into attack without any artillery preparation. Instead, the Heads pinned their hopes on the new landships, all of which broke down or were shot to pieces. Accordingly, our lads were left defenceless in front of belts of uncut wire. Despite this, the attackers still took the first two trenches and had to fight off furious German counterattacks. The debacle was compounded when the artillery was held back for reasons unknown. The poor blighters had to give up their hard-fought gains and withdraw in daylight through a blizzard of lead and steel. To no one's surprise, the casualties were appalling, with brigades struggling to parade more than a battalion's worth of fit men. The casualty list included over 1,000 missing. One hopes, for the sake of their families, that many of these lads are simply prisoners and will live to see their loved ones again.